Happy New Year, folks. I hope you had a wonderful holiday season, and probably you're getting ready to go back to work as this cast is being released on January 4th. As you may have figured out, we have a tradition here at Manager Tools, if you've been listening to the cast that we released over the holidays, of re-releasing our Setting Goals series of casts over the break. Many, many people take quiet time around the holidays to think about the coming year and set goals. For those of you attending our M conference, we had a great presentation the other day from Dan McGuire talking about how to do an executive level reset. And this week, this cast, we're going to share one of my very favorite casts that addresses the problems that many managers have that their bosses don't tell them what their responsibilities are. So this cast is called Getting Your Goals from Your Boss, and we're going to tell you how to prepare for the meeting when your boss is not giving you the guidance you need. And to be clear, you can't walk in barehanded. You've got to have done some advanced work and made some educated guesses. And regardless of whether your boss is willing to give you goals or not, either you'll start an iterative process with her, or you'll end up with goals that he can bless, even if he didn't come up with them. So again, Happy New Year, and here's the cast. And remember, this is a re-release, so after me, you're going to hear Mike do the original introduction of this cast, which I think came out in April of 2016.
Welcome to Manager Tools. Getting your goals from your boss, part one. Here we go. This cast answers these questions. What if I don't have clear goals for my boss? How do I find out how my boss is going to measure me? How can I help my boss set goals for me and my team? You want answers to these questions and more? Keep listening.
If your knowledge of desk, high Ds, Is, Ss, and Cs, the perfectionists, the Attila the Huns, the marketers, the team players, if that has helped you become more effective at work, you'll want to seriously consider coming to our Effective Communications Conference. We set the basics of DISC in an hour or so, and then we spend the rest of the day teaching you how finally to communicate effectively, which is to pay attention to what your listener does and communicate in a way that makes sense to them. At the end of the day, you'll be able to read someone in a conversation, determine their major DISC tendency, and then based on that, make some changes in how you deliver to improve the chances that you get harmony and congruence and collaboration and not drama, conflict, and tension. Come see us.
Mark, you said this, I want to say a million times. It's probably not a million, but it's pretty darn close. The first rule of management is get results.
Yeah. If you've been to one of our conferences, we start off, our Effective Manager Conference, we start off talking about that. We're recording this in the first part of 2016. My book, The Effective Manager, comes out in the middle of this year, and it starts with that very same thing.
Surprise,
and what's sad
surprise.
About that? Yeah. And you know, what's interesting is I assumed kind of everybody knew that at some level. And so for several years, we did not talk about that. And then we realized that one of the reasons people struggled with one-on-ones or feedback or coaching or delegation is they didn't understand the derivation. They didn't understand what we started with and therefore the inevitability of you've got to do these behaviors and so on.
Right. And we may have led people down the wrong path inadvertently, of course, because in the very beginning of the podcast, we talked about relationships, right? And one-on-ones and developing relationships with your directs, which of course is important,
but in the service of results.
That's right. You can't get long-term results without relationships. You can get short-term results, but it's a different story.
Yeah. And even though you find out about that, you learn that, okay, my big job is results, you realize pretty quickly, oh, well, that creates a new problem for me. I have almost no idea what my boss thinks is the most important part of my job. I know what I'm working on today. I know that the organization can ask me to do anything. I know I feel whipsawed back and forth by various priorities, right? And, you know, my boss might have interest in six things, but which one does she think is most important? And frankly, for a lot of us, I think that we have a reasonable conclusion that we're not sure our boss will be able to tell us what they would measure us on. And the fact is, guys, I hate to tell you this, but in all of our experience, you're right. Your boss probably won't in many, many, many cases.
Right. And if your boss does, then consider yourself lucky that you're working for her, because it's somewhat unusual. Yeah.
If your boss has already done this with you, you're in single digit percentages, folks. There are some jobs, sales, where it's pretty easy, but most other jobs, it's vague. And the reason why it's vague in many cases is managers don't know how to do it. Directors, VPs don't do it. They're like, oh, they should know. Oh, they're smart. They'll figure it out. But talk about a lack of alignment when we're all figuring it out, but we could have clear communications about it.
Yeah, so you get results. You just got the wrong results. Oops.
Yeah.
So what do you do? So I'd say the majority of folks probably don't have alignment on that. So how do I get it with the understanding that my boss may not actually know, as sad as that is?
Yeah. And so if you're listening, you're likely a manager. This cast, this guidance is for managers about your director and you, essentially. And at Manager Tools, we use the term director to mean its original intent, which is manager of managers. So a series of steps. First, do some background work. And we've got a long list of stuff that you need to do. Then we want you to do some preparation with that background work. Step three is you've got to understand your risk. If you don't have this information from your boss, having this conversation with your boss is not risk-free. And so it could be entirely possible that you'll do the work and you will have to make the decision. I don't feel comfortable talking to my boss about this. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. And then in terms of the actual meeting with your boss, you're going to request some time with your boss. You're not going to do it blindly. You're going to tell him or her what you're doing and why you're doing it. You're going to have to send some advanced materials. You're going to have to ask for help rather than answers, because if your boss doesn't know and you ask her for answers, she's going to feel defensive. And frankly, guys, based on our experience, having had hundreds of managers follow this guidance, you should expect some lack of clarity back from your boss. You'll probably end the process with more clarity than you started with, but if you're wanting crystal clarity, 100% alignment, that's a pipe dream. It won't happen.
Okay. Now, I'm surprised by your first one. Do some background work. You know, to me, it seems pretty easy, right? I just send an email to my boss, say, hey, could you outline my goals and objectives and priorities and all that? I mean, clearly she knows what they are, so why not just do that? Seems like I mean, if I wrote this podcast, it'd be, yeah, just send an email to your boss. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the ultimate encapsulation of the vagueness of clear measures and goals and accountabilities and so on is the annual review process. Annual reviews, I could talk about them for hours. They're horrible almost everywhere. And part of the problem is the boss isn't clear. You know, if Mike's my boss and he's unclear about what he's measuring me on, or he's unclear what the standards are, of course, I'm certainly less clear than he is because he has a better perspective. But if he's unclear about it, how great can he feel about the review he gives me at the end of the year? So part of the reason reviews don't work is the boss doesn't feel this incredible clarity. The boss may feel powerful enough to give you a ranking, but there's a part of your boss that's like, yeah, I don't really feel great about this. So the fact is, this information may very well exist in your organization and you may not be able to find it. But if you just send an email to your boss, you admit that you don't know something important about your job. And depending upon what kind of boss you have, that may be an issue. You imply that your boss knows, but he or she hasn't told you. And they may deep down know that they haven't told you, but they assume that it's become obvious to you. And the fact that you haven't sussed it out yourself is they can blame you for that. Or I'll tell you the thing that bugs them is you're making him do the work, right? Like, well, okay, come to my office. Let me walk you through it again. And you also send a message that you kind of owe me this and I'm not willing to work to get it or to figure it out for yourself. And all of that belies what we believe is the big one in many cases, is that you may be pointing out what probably would have been better left unsaid that your boss doesn't know either. Now, when I use the word know there, guys, if you're a director, for instance, you might say, wow, Mark just kind of insulted me. I don't mean that at all. There's a difference between having an understanding in your head about what your directs are doing. And there's a difference between that and telling each direct, here's what I want you to work on, here's what the measures are, and here's what the goals are. That is the hard work of managing, of organizational structure and turning it into goal alignment and repeatable metrics and so on.
Right. And that is kind of like the difference between knowing something in the general sense, right? Knowing something and being able to teach something.
Exactly.
Until you teach it, you really don't know. You don't know it. Just think about the number of times. I just think of the number of times somebody said, well, can you teach me how to do X? So, I know how to do that. And then I go to teach them how to do it. It's like, no, I guess I don't know it.
Exactly. I've had that happen to me many times with directs who were gifted in an area that I wasn't. I said, hey, explain to me how you do that. They're like, well, I don't know how. And if you can't explain how you do something to somebody else, the organization's not going to consider that really important in some ways. Because, of course, it's not sustainable. It's not repeatable. It's not teachable. One of my favorite sayings by one of my favorite writers is, you cannot think what you cannot say. Meaning, if you have a thought in your head, but you are unable to communicate it, that thought is really of little value in the here and now in the organizational world.
And it's probably not a great thought because it's probably not detailed. You don't understand enough detail to explain it. It's probably not well thought through in the first place.
Yeah, this has happened to both of us, right? You're like, oh, I got that. And then you start explaining it. And it happened. We're talking about work and we're like, okay, let me start over and go back up a couple
of
levels. Yeah, exactly.
I don't know what I'm talking about. I think I've said that before. Yeah, after 5 minutes, like.
I'll call you back later after I have my ducks in a row.
Yeah, exactly.
So guys, our first bit of guidance here about prep work is go ahead and take it slow, okay? If you're listening to this cast and you're saying, wow, it occurs to me, I don't have a good feel for what I'm going to be held accountable for at the end of the year. And you're saying, let me get this done. Let me knock this out. It wouldn't bother me at all if you took a month. Okay. Assume for now that you won't need your boss's input. Okay. Assume as you go through the guidance we're about to give you in terms of gathering data, preparatory stuff, assume that there's a way for you to figure out the answer to your question before you ever have to ask your boss. Yeah, sure. You can ask your boss if you can't nail it down yourself. But for now, don't involve your boss. Do it yourself. Assume you'll be able to figure it out. And then at the very end, when you have a look and you say, okay, how would I measure this? You may have 95% of it. And particularly if your relationship with your director boss is not that great, don't fall on your sword or create a political problem or a sensitivity problem between you and your director boss for that last 5%. Don't do it. If you've got 95% of it done and you present that all to your boss and you don't have a good relationship with your boss might stupidly think that you're trying to show him up and you're trying to game the system by saying, this is what I want you to measure me on. And there are bosses in the world, like it or not, they're probably not listening to manager tools. You could argue that in some ways they're professionally unethical that would use this against you. That would say, this is just him trying to get what he wants rather than being a team player. So now I'm going to say perhaps the most important concept in this entire cast. And by the way, this concept applies to virtually everything we do all the time at work. Okay. To help you as you go through this process, think of the effort you're going to go through as having three parts, three separate parts that each one has its own way of thinking about it. Part one is the work you do. Part two is how you're going to measure that work. And part three is the standards within those measures for your performance. Okay? This is where people get confused. They really get confused between the second and third parts. Look, you should be able to get a pretty good handle on what it is you work on. There's plenty of available data there, you know. Heck, I tell people all the time, if you want to know what you work on, go through your email. People complain about email all the time, but man, it's a treasure trove. Okay, how to measure it gets a little bit harder. Sometimes you'll have to guess a little bit. You probably don't have to guess. We're going to give you enough data that you're going to know what it is you work on. But how to measure it gets a little bit harder. And in fact, there are plenty of directors, and in fact, plenty of you who are managers who are listening, who are thinking about your individual contributors, and you don't have clear measures for them if they listened to this cast and then came to you later and said, here's what I think you ought to be measuring me on. And lastly, the standards for your performance will probably be a complete guess. So We're going to start with this. There are three things we ultimately want to get out of this process, but don't worry that you don't know what the standard is that your boss is going to apply, because he or she may not know it either. I mean, seriously. But I want you to think of it this way. As an example, if I'm in geometry class, okay, the work I'm doing is geometry problems. I remember geometry very well. I'm doing math problems, okay? How to measure it is how many problems I get right and wrong. Is the problem right or wrong? Because there's a problem and there's a way to prove it. And if you prove it, you're right. And if you can't prove it, you're wrong in proving theorems and so on. So the standard is how you're going to be graded for that work. Okay. In order to have a standard, 90% as an example, there has to be a measurement factor. In this case, it's whether your answers are right or wrong, and then how many of them you do. But you could actually create the measure, is it right or wrong, and how many did you get right or wrong, and still not understand the standard that your boss is applying. And you may be doing work and literally not know how it's being measured, when in fact the measures may be all around you, and we hope to find that during this process.
Yeah, in this example, if I were your geometry teacher, and you outline those measures and standards, I might say, hey, that's good. Except the other factor is how much time it takes you.
Okay, good. Right? Now, yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, this is interesting because now you've brought up the situation where I have a 10-question geometry test and I only finish one of the answers. The geometry test is set with a time limit so that we don't have to measure how long it takes you. If you don't finish it, it's wrong, right? Right? So the measure of right and wrong already includes inherent in it the time factor, because if you only get one right, but it takes you 10 times as long as everybody else, you're going to get a 10% on the test.
That's right.
Which probably would be failing. At work, though, Mike, now you're talking about time, and look, we're going to get to it, guys, but it's a little bit of foreshadowing here. If you're not thinking about people and resources, which tend to be money and time, and quality, you may have some good ideas, but those have to be considered somehow in your measures, generally speaking. People, resources, and quality. And resources, again, off the top, we're not going to go into all the different resources you have, are money and time. One of which, by the way, is renewable and the other of which is not.
So therefore, one of them is probably more important than the other. Just saying.
Yeah, just saying. just saying. Okay. And of course, everybody's thinking money when we think it's time. Okay. So with that in mind, just keep that in the back of your mind, guys. There's three parts. There's the work, there's the measures, and the standards. You're going to be able to figure out the work through this process. You're probably going to have a pretty good sense of the measures. If you don't know what the standards are, that's okay. You probably, like many, many people in the world, and they find out what the standards are when the boss writes the review at the end of the year. Actually, no, they don't find out the standards. They suppose the standards. They guess the standards. They infer the standards from the generic sort of vague cloud of feedback that the boss gives them. Part of the reason, guys, that performance reviews at the end of the year are frustrating is you would like information about your performance, not to say that you shouldn't have had it daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly beforehand, but it ends up being, when companies say, it ends up being largely about your pay, that's because that's a measure. And managers say all the time, well, really what they want to know about is pay. And I think, in fact, we talk about that in our four-part series from 11 years ago about how to prepare, how to write, and how to deliver a performance review. We talk about pay being on the front of everybody's mind. Part of that is because the process is so horrible. It's the only thing we can get a measure on. Everything else is kind of vague, which, again, is a function of lack of clarity of what your job is. I'm going on and on and on, Mike. Shall we get to the data gathering?
Yeah, so we got to gather some data. There's some sources of data that are worth considering.
Some of them are obvious, some of them aren't. Let's just walk through them. First one, job description. Folks, we know you probably don't have one as a manager, especially if you're a director. But if you do, it might be a good source of high-level deliverables for your role.
Right, even if it's not completely accurate, right? If it's
No. Yeah. Right? None of these resources that we're going to mine
are going to be completely accurate. Some of them are going to be contradictory.
Yeah, wildly inaccurate.
Yeah, and that's okay. But if we have a full-page job description and there are two key nuggets we get out of it, I'm fine with that. I am not saying I'm looking for the Holy Grail. I'm not. I'm looking for data. I'm just gathering data. That's all I'm doing. I'm not looking for answers. I'm just gathering data. If you start looking for answers, you'll start getting frustrated and you'll start fixating on good pieces of data, which you then imbue with the idea that that's an answer, and that then affects the rest of your work. There are two parts of data gathering or information gathering. One is you gather the information and then you think about it afterwards. Stay in neutral as you're gathering the data. Of course, your brain is working subconsciously and already getting way ahead of you. But if you're not careful and you say, well, is this the answer? Oh, well, there's the answer right there. No, it's really not. You need to draw the whole picture before you draw specific conclusions.
Right. For those of you who understand DISC and you're a high C, you want accuracy, dot your I's, cross your T's.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Okay. You got to put that in neutral because the standard here is not accuracy so much as it is quantity, right? You want a big pile of data and then you go through the data. That's the standard, quantity.
And if you're thinking that what you need to do for your boss is give her 99% of what she needs, you're never going to get that. I mean, you might get lucky, but the chances, you know, we'll have a million people listen to this guidance this month, I would be very surprised if more than 100 people could get to 99%. I think the vast majority of people listening, 70 or 80%, will get to 50%. And 50% is fine in terms of understanding the complexity, the completeness of your job. And your job, at the end, your boss may say, you know what, this is good enough, and we'll use this for now, and we'll adjust every year or every 6 months on this, and your boss may accept 50%. If you grind trying to go from 50 to 80% in terms of the data you collect and so on, you're probably past the point of diminishing returns. So, first point about job descriptions, just because you've never seen a job description for your role doesn't mean there isn't one. You can probably just email somebody in HR. If there is one for your job, HR is the most likely place to have it. If they can't find it, though, it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. But if they can't find it, it may not be worth the trouble. If you have a really good relationship with your boss and you don't think she'll think something's up, you could ask her. I mean, if one of my directs said, hey, can I see my job description? I'm like, sure, it's fine. I don't care. But that comes from trust. If you don't have trust like that with your boss, don't do it. If you find one for your role, read through it. Make some notes for anything that you think will be helpful in putting together a metrics and a standards sheet. Start a list somewhere of what you learned from each of the sources we've discussed here. It were me, I learned this from Mike. I'd probably use OmniFocus, and I just create a list. Mike, you would probably use Evernote. There are plenty of people who would use pads of paper, and that would be fine. After you look for the job description, now we want to recommend you look for a virtual job description, which is to say there isn't actually something you look for. But if you can't find a job description, you can create a rough estimate of one by answering some questions that we've put out. People ask us for these questions all the time. A series of questions that should give you a broad perspective on the job. And here they are.
Pay attention, folks. This is gold right here. When I read the show notes, I was like, this is good.
If you're a licensee, easy. Just download the show notes and you've got a list right here. The reason the company created this job is blank. Okay. The most important ways a person doing this job should spend their time are blank. The 2 to 3 most important duties of this job are blank. What this job takes to be successful is blank. The simplest, easiest way to see if this job is being done well is blank. Okay? And again, you're gathering data. This data is coming out of your head, and you probably don't think about these questions on a daily or weekly or ever basis because you're down in the weeds getting work done. This is actually metadata about your work. But when you ask yourself, you're probably a pretty good source of the work that you do. Next, ask your peers. Maybe they have a job description, assuming that some of your peers are somehow related to what it is you do. Or even if they don't, if you work on a team where all of your work has to be aggregated in some way in order to provide value to your boss, as opposed to, say, a bunch of sales managers whose work stands alone. My work doesn't need to be added in some work function to another sales manager's role so that there is value created. I create work and value independent of the sales manager who is my peer. But even if your peer and your work is different and it gets aggregated in some way, what they get evaluated upon may be insightful, helpful, may shine a bit of a light indirectly on what it is you do.
That's right. And you might have common responsibilities in terms of development of your people, et cetera.
Exactly. And they might have a job description. They might also have asked your boss previously to define their role, to define their metrics and the standards.
Just last week.
Yeah. Or they might have done it this way, or maybe they just threw something together. Okay. So you could say to them, hey, I'm trying to get clear on what my goals are. Do you have anything in the realm of a job description for our roles? Previous guidance from the boss, your own list of key metrics, anything like that. And again, add that stuff to the list you've started. Anything that you think seems relevant out of the discussion you have with each of your peers. Next, review your last performance review. Since the one time any overall goals that you're going to be held accountable for would, by definition, be at your annual review, it's worth checking. A lot of us spend so much time worrying about surprises and next year's compensation that we tend to tune out a lot of other stuff. And it may actually have been written down, but in our heads, we were just saying, what's my overall rating and how big a raise did I get? Your metrics may be on your review in some fashion, or at least be able to be recalled from the conversation you had, particularly if you're doing this in the first quarter of the year. It sounds weird, but if you've updated your resume briefly every quarter, making it a living career management document per our guidance, there may be some accomplishments on there worth adding to your list. And lots of times, important accomplishments are pointers to key metrics. And accomplishments are sometimes a bit random over the course of the year. But if you have a lot of them, look for themes. Do they always involve customers? Do they always have a cost control component? Maybe one of the key deliverables is actually efficient project management. Capture on your list what seems relevant. Now we're going to get into an interesting area. Check recent job advertisements. Look at the ad that was for your opening, the job you're in now, if you're new.
Yeah, and if you go look and you find a job description or a job posting for your job, then that's useful information to know too. Just saying.
Dude, that's dark. If you've been in your role for a while and so the job ad is gone, see if there are recent ads for some of your peers. You've probably already gotten some simple ideas from the work you've already been done, and there may not be much there. But if something is in there that you don't do, don't think about it. Make a note about it. If your boss does one-on-ones with you, go back through your notes. Look for patterns about what your boss is most interested in. And folks, use this step, the one-on-one step, as a more general reminder to ask yourself about the things your boss pays attention to on a regular basis, even if it's outside of one-on-ones, especially if your boss doesn't do one-on-ones with you. What do you get praised for? What does your boss ask for status of about the most? What does she get stressed about? What do you get in trouble for? It's one of my favorites. And I think if you ask my directs now, the thing they get in trouble for is not communicating. Now, that's just me. We don't have job descriptions yet at Manager Tools. But, you know, I tell people all the time, it's all about people. And the people are known in my organization. And then more communication is better. I just had a conversation yesterday with one of my directs. They found out something and they thought that was interesting, but they didn't share it with me. Now, I don't need to know everything they know, but they didn't realize, though they should have, that me knowing that, because it wasn't related to what they do, but it was related to something that I do, that me knowing that would have saved me a bunch of time. And they found out about it randomly, and they thought it was interesting, and they thought about it, but they didn't think to communicate about it. And as a general rule, for me anyway, if you think something's interesting, you ought to be sharing it. Everybody else who hears it from you can ignore it. Oh, that's interesting to her, but not to me. Fine. But for me, communication is really important. So my director would probably say, I need to write down communication here. I don't know that it would go on my ultimate list. I don't know how Mark measures it, but I got to put down communication, because when I get in trouble, it seems like it's because I didn't tell him or somebody else something.
Can we modify that rule a little bit about if it's interesting, tell your boss? I mean, if it's interesting and it's not about puppies and rainbows and
you don't
need to share that with me. In case my directs are listening, you don't need to share that with me.
I will say this, though. I have learned that if I say to somebody, if it's interesting, I want to know it, except if it's these things, I've essentially killed it. It's why we say, I had this conversation yesterday at a client. I agree with you, Mike. Personally, I would prefer to only hear about stuff that I want to know about. But the moment you start giving caveats, you start putting ideas in their head. Oh, should I give this or not?
Right, and they start wondering whether or not this is really the right type of interesting thing. Right, it's kind of like one-on-ones, right?
It's like one-on-ones. Get you talk about whatever you want to talk about. You don't tell directs, hey, we can talk about anything as long as it's about work and things that you think I need to know. No, that's the whole point. That's damaging to their relationship. You've got to tell people you can talk about whatever you want to talk about, including puppies and rainbows.
This management stuff is so hard.
I know. Why doesn't everybody think just like you? It would be so much easier for you if everything was just, you know, everybody just did stuff just like you. And really, if you think about this a little bit, when we say getting in trouble, we don't mean if you miss deadlines a lot on a broad range of topics and projects like timesheets and weekly reports, answers to email, and your boss has to remind you, okay? If you miss a lot of deadlines on stuff like that, it's unlikely that one of your job's key goals is getting everything in on time, even if your boss has a focus on timeliness on everything. What we're looking for here are areas that your boss pays more attention to. If your boss is always asking you for status on Project X and drills down for details when you're red on a task, and he also lets slide late time cards or expense reimbursement requests, the thing to capture is Project X, okay? So we're looking for behaviors not because those behaviors are the key, but rather that they point to things that would be important relative to your metrics and your standards. Next, check your email and calendar. Just scan through them. You don't have to read every email. Just scan them. Look for reminders of projects that cropped up. And if you want more detailed guidance about this, we always get in trouble for repeating ourselves. If you look at our annual reviews cast, if you listen to that guidance, we give you a detailed way to go through your emails. But again, you don't have to scan them. Look for reminders of projects that cropped up, short-term efforts that you may have forgotten that point toward a theme for your role in some fashion. Add them to your list. Look for meetings on your calendar that are a reminder of major projects forgotten, additional duties that may have been important, so on. Now, we've done all this, and I can promise you folks, this list that you've come up with isn't exhaustive for everybody.
It's a pretty big start, though.
But yeah, exactly. And it's possible that you'll be able to come up with a pretty good idea of what your boss ought to be expecting you to do. And that's all you need in terms of this work.
All right. So let's end it here. We've gone long enough for this week. And
I'm going to get some mail about me going too long.
Yeah, I know. And my inane jokes and trying to keep it funny. And that's the advantage of becoming a licensee, that like subtle ad right here, right? And getting the show notes. And then you don't have to listen to Mike at all.
Cause it's just, you don't have to listen to Mark at all either. Yeah.
The inane jokes are not in the show notes, folks. They're not planned. They're just me being silly.
I tell people all the time, if you don't want to listen, become a licensee. It's not expensive and it's valuable. I'll tell you that we had an iTunes review that Wendy shared with me saying, yeah, these guys talk too long. I wish they'd get the point. And I think out of like our 600 or 700 or 800 reviews on iTunes, 597 of them are good and 20 or 30 or so are bad. And I think there's a pretty clear vein of one of the hosts talk too much. I'm pretty sure they're talking about me. And Wendy said, I wonder if we should do anything about this. And I said, nope, never take counsel of your fears And the vast majority of folks want more detail, more specificity, and we understand we're not for everybody. So if it was a little long, guys, we apologize. And there are other people who are writing and saying, thank you for the detail. Thank you for the specificity. You know, we don't want to become like so many management books out there that give you a high level guidance, but then don't tell you what to do. We'll always be down in the weeds. It takes a little bit longer, but we think that's what most managers want and need.
And we'll throw in an inane joke every once in a while. Sorry.
There you go.
All right. Thanks, my friend. We'll continue this next week.
Okay.
See you later.
You bet, partner.
Thanks, everyone. That's it for this week. We'll continue on this topic next week. In the meantime, have a great one. So long.
This podcast was produced by Manager Tools. Manager Tools creates actionable management guidance every single week. To receive additional materials via our newsletter and to find products for situations you may face as a manager or professional, go to www.manager-tools.com. Search for Manager Tools on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn.
Welcome to Manager Tools. Getting goals from your boss, part two. Here we go.
If your knowledge of DISC, high D's, I's, S's, and C's, the perfectionists, the Attila the Huns, the marketers, the team players, if that has helped you become more effective at work, you'll want to seriously consider coming to our Effective Communications Conference. We set the basics of DISC in an hour or so, and then we spend the rest of the day teaching you how finally to communicate effectively, which is to pay attention to what your listener does and communicate in a way that makes sense to them. At the end of the day, you'll be able to read someone in a conversation, determine their major DISC tendency, and then based on that, make some changes in how you deliver to improve the chances that you get harmony and congruence and collaboration and not drama, conflict, and tension. Come see us.
Last week, Mark, you kind of walked us through all the data we can collect around getting goals from your boss. And there's a lot. But of course, then you just don't dump it on your boss. There's some preparation that you need to do.
Yeah. In fact, I felt like we went into a lot of detail last week, and there's yet even more preparation because, as we mentioned, there's risk. You want to be aware of the potential risk. And basically what we're going to do now in preparing is to see what all the data you've gathered tells you about your role and how you can use it. And this is the hardest step because your goals and your metrics aren't what you do, but they're measures of how well you're supposed to do them. And it's completely normal. It's one thing for us to have a good sense of what we do. It's another thing entirely to figure out how your boss is going to want to measure that. And I think I said this in our first part, but think of this effort you're making as having three parts: the work you do, how to measure it, and the standards for your performance. The work should be pretty clear. The measurement may not be, and we'll make a lot of suggestions here. And the standards, which are whether you have to get half or three quarters or all or whatever goal might be set for you, might very well be a stab in the dark if it's never been shared with you before. You know, an example, when you study geometry in school, largely the work was geometry problems, right? We talked about this last show. The measurement was how many of the problems you got right, and the standard was the grading scale you were measured against. Another example, project management. The work is the project. The measurements likely are timeliness, budget, and scope. And the standards are then within each of those areas goals to achieve. For instance, deliver within 72 hours of deadline, budget maybe plus or minus 1%, and scope might be characterized as customer satisfied sign-off. And so you probably know the work, and we're going to hopefully help you with the measures, and maybe in some cases you'll be able to figure out what the standard will be. But it's most likely that you're going to need your boss to set the standards, even though you can certainly make recommendations if you want to go that far. So what we're faced with now is figuring out what the measure should be. If you have clear measures, count yourself lucky. In a way, anyway.
Yeah, sales is a good example of that, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, I feel very lucky that I started in sales first part of my career. I didn't realize the extent to which sales, until I left sales, how much grief sales got by other departments. But the clarity of sales goals, you know, basically, did you make your number or not, full stop, can be great. Your number is clear. On the other hand, it can be a concern too, because now your measure is clear to your boss and to you and to everybody else. It becomes very black and white. Did you or did you not achieve the goal? You know, looking at it from the other way, which I think affects the vast majority of managers and individual contributors in the world, if your number isn't clear, they can't hold you accountable for that number.
Which is not necessarily a good thing, because they're going to hold you accountable for other stuff that you may or may not be aware of.
Right? Yeah, exactly. And so, it, I mean, this part of the system is completely messed up, and it's all human frailty, and we're not going to change it overnight. But in the next 100 years or so, management will figure it out. But look, when it comes to measuring your work, you don't need to be exactly right. If you meet with your boss and you have some pretty good examples, some proxies, some measures, and maybe you recommend some goals, if you're wrong, she'll correct it. If you're close, she'll adjust it. Chances are, for most of us, your boss, our boss, hasn't thought about this a great deal, or at least hasn't thought about solving it publicly a great deal. And if he hasn't, he may well consider what you propose as a template to apply to everyone, which could be, again, both good and bad. So when we're thinking about measures, remember to make sure whatever you choose as a measure is something you can measure. Don't create or write down what you think of as the perfect measure that will take your PMO a week to create a spreadsheet for every month. Don't use something that isn't already tracked or that you don't have the time to create the tracking process for. Or don't create something that will take someone else an hour to decipher.
Right. Okay. So when you said choose something that you can measure, the emphasis is on you, right? Something that you can measure, not something that you rely on somebody else to measure.
Yeah, exactly.
And something that you can measure now versus something that you need to go create some system and take 5 weeks to figure out how you're going to measure it.
Yeah. In fact, when you look at large companies and people think, oh, yeah, companies' measures are clear. So if we're talking about a profit company, well, it's profit. Okay. But that's not the mission or the goal of the company. Profit is actually a proxy. It's just one way to measure the company. And if you've paid any attention to things that happen on Wall Street or investment banking or in stock markets in general all over the world, the Bourse or Hang Seng, anything like that, they are measuring bunches of things of companies, and many of those things are intention. So it's okay to measure two or three things and to not have them be perfect.
That's what I was going to ask you about, because you know, a lot of folks' experiences, well, you ask me to measure what I do. Well, there's no way to measure it exactly. I mean, how do I measure how good my code is, for example? What's the, you know, like, how do I measure that? So you get locked in this battle and months go by and you still haven't figured out how to measure it perfectly.
I didn't include it here because people have told me it's snarky, but a simple rule, and now that I'm thinking about it, I probably should include it, so I'll just say it. A simple rule for, off the top of your head, trying to measure the work that you do. You mentioned code. This is the example. That's the situation I was in when somebody said, well, you can't measure it. And I said, well, actually, I can. I can measure the number of words and all kinds of other things, too. And they're like, well, that's not. And I said, look, here's the simplest way I'm going to ask you to think about writing code. Okay. Is there somebody in your team who's really good? Yeah. Is there somebody in your team who's not very good? Yeah. Okay. Can you tell me the differences? Yeah. Well, that's what to measure.
Right.
And look, you could measure whether or not you meet the deadline, how many bugs were fixed, how many operational faults are found in the first 3 to 6 months due to your code, you know, whether or not your code is commented. I mean, look, we measure manufacturing facilities for whether or not they have the right part at the right time on the factory floor. Because if parts are always late, we believe that's going to lead to a delay in manufacturing. And I don't think people understand, Mike, you and I have had this conversation many times about how it's easy to push things back and delay things. But if you push a project back and it's 2 months late getting out into the market, if you're not aware of how the company runs or how the company produces cash by selling things, you don't realize that not only are you costing more labor, probably, so the cost is going up, even though it may not be directly accounted for in the price of the good, but you've just lost 2 months worth of revenue. The month that comes out as the first month would have been the third month that the product was in sales. So now that third month is essentially your first month. And so you've basically taken that first month sales, let's say it's $10 million, and moved it back 3 months. So the first 2 months, which may have been $10 and $12 million, you've just cost the company, what is that, $22 million in 2 months. Now you might say, well, we're going to make the money later. Yeah, but we have to plan our budgets and we have to plan our processes and we have to plan our cash flow and so on. So a lot of people want to come up with the right measurement, and I understand it. And the fact is, you're probably not going to. You're going to come up with something that approximates how well you're doing. And that question of who's really good at what you do and who's not really good at what you do, that could give you some indication of some things. Now, our favorite way to do this is to create, and I've mentioned it already, a proxy. You know, rather than wondering what the right measurement is that someone else knows, and that's that, you know, Mike, you and I have talked about this before about managers, the rampant problem of, oh, well, I don't know it, but somebody else does. And that makes me feel bad. Trust me, guys.
Yeah, that makes me feel stupid, and I'm not going to expose my ignorance by asking somebody.
Exactly, right. Rather than looking for the perfect measurement, use a measurement that reasonably represents the activity you're measuring. Don't worry just yet what the organizational standard is. If there is one, the boss is going to share it with you. Don't worry about best in class either. If they exist, but you don't know them, and your boss and your company don't know them or use them, don't let the perfect be the opposite of the good. And this is why proxies make so much sense, in part because until we all get taught the science of measuring work, which is not a trivial endeavor, the individual who does the work ought to have some input into the measurement of the work, or at least a person close to them, their manager, but the manager's not doing it. And by the way, virtually everything that's measured in large organizations internally is, in fact, a proxy for something else. Yeah, we want that. We want that part to be where it's supposed to be on time, but it's actually a proxy to help us either diagnose problems or to predict our likelihood of meeting our overall organizational goal. In this case, say, you know, product shipped out the door. Even product shipped out the door on time is a proxy for we're going to make money on those products when we said we would.
Right. There's probably some people that are still struggling with the idea of a proxy. Do you have a good example? But maybe outside of the business world. And
yeah, this is one of my all-time favorites. And I admit, this is not a perfect example of a proxy because I've used this a lot, and the vast majority of people in the room nod their head and go, yeah, okay, that makes sense. Then some people go, yeah, I don't get it. One guy actually said, I don't run the 40-yard dash. How is that relevant to me? So if you're struggling with the idea of a proxy, here's a popular example, actually a couple of them. The NFL, the National Football League, has an annual combine, and they put players through a series of tests, and two of them, the bench press and the 40-yard dash test, are well known.
And just for those who don't, who aren't in the United States and not familiar with American football, so this is generally, right, folks coming out of college who are essentially applying, right, want to get drafted into the NFL, become a professional player. And so this is part of the evaluation criteria.
Yeah, you have to be invited. You have to be a top prospect. And they go to an event in Indianapolis every year where their skills are tested through various events, bench press, vertical jump, broad jump, 40-yard dash, and all kinds of skill tests and so on. Now look, they have to do a bench press, and everybody has to do bench press and 40-yard dash. no pro player will ever do a bench press during a game. And there are guys who do a lot of bench presses at the combine and who are therefore ranked highly for that, who then don't do well when they get into the NFL in football. And there are guys who don't do a lot of bench presses but get drafted and become outstanding players. So it's clear that the bench press is not a perfect predictor of future success. But the NFL still measures the idea of strength, which I don't think anybody listening would argue strength being stronger, all things being equal, which of course they never are at Budna. Strength is a good thing to have, and we need some way to measure it. So they measure strength through the proxy of the bench press. The league believes that strength is important, and the bench press represents a reasonable way to measure that strength. Not perfect, not guaranteed 100% predictive, but reasonably useful. The same is true of the 40-yard dash. Clearly, speed can matter in a football game. But they never run a 40-yard dash without pads on in a straight line with no fear of being blocked or tackled in an actual game. On the other hand, there are those who excel at the 40-yard dash who don't turn out to be good players. There are those who are considered slow at the 40-yard dash who go on to greatness. But the league believes speed matters. And the 40-yard dash is a reasonable way, a proxy, to measure speed. And so you don't have to think, oh, how do companies do this? That's how I felt a lot early in my career. Oh, there's a right way to do this, and I don't know what it is. And then I learned that nobody knew. In fact, this is what led to benchmarking in a lot of companies. So what proxies might you use in your situation? As a general rule, we recommend you think of using the sub-behaviors that make up the work product behaviors in our guidance of the five behaviors. If you don't know this, guys, what you're paid to do is achieve results. And the primary way somebody achieves results at work is behavior. And there are five behaviors. And this flows through everything Manager Tools does. Mike and I believe it's one of the most important conceptual contributions Manager Tools is making to the world of work. Those five behaviors are the words you say, how you say them, your facial expressions, your body language, and your work product. And work product is generally considered to be quality, quantity, accuracy, timeliness, documentation, and safety is often included. Depends on the type of job you have. I'm sure there are some people going, God, I wish I could write this down. Of course, if you were a licensee, you could have the show notes and it's all written out for you. So what we want to do is take each one of those and give you an example. Here are some proxy examples. Here are some things to think about in each of the areas. Okay. Quantity. How much work do you and your team do? That's the overarching thought. How many forms do you or your team process? How many tasks that are part of your role that you have lists of do you and your team complete? How many projects have you or your team completed? How many sales calls did you or your team make? How many errors did you or your team correct? How many tubs did your team ship? How many customer service emails did your team answer? What was your percentage of budget spent? And I could go on with a bunch more when it comes to quantity and budget, guys. Those are some simple examples. They're my favorites. Quantity is my favorite because it can be objectified, and I like that. Quality. How did your team's work compare to a defect standard? How many shipments were returned? How many bugs did you fix? How many net promoter scores over 50 did you achieve? How many rewrites did your code require? Accuracy. How few errors did your team have in all or part of its work? What was your deviance against predictions, deadlines? How many of your team's bugs did QA have to fix? What percentage of your builds passed on first test? timeliness. How many project deadlines did you meet? How many projects were delivered on time? What percentage of parts were considered on time by shipping? Documentation. What percentage of your reports were on time? Safety. How many safety incidents did your team have? How many days in a row did your team go without a safety incident? How many injuries did your team sustain? How many safety meetings did your team attend? What was your team's average response time to safety incidents? So those are the sub-behavioral categories. Let's now talk about two additional strategic categories we need to talk about for managers. First one's people, and the second one's retention. Because normally we would say the two big things for managers are results and retention. We started the show with that, with results. But of course, all the stuff above is about getting to proxies or measures for results. But people and retention are an important part of what managers do. So for people, what percentage of your team met their deliverables? What percentage of your team were given top quintile ratings? How many of your team members were considered for or granted high potential status? What portion of your team received maximum performance or merit increases? What portion of your team completed their development plans for the year? Retention. What was your quarterly or annual retention rate? Did you lose any high potential performers? What was your team's engagement score average from the annual employee survey? And look, guys, we know the list we just ran down, probably pretty quickly for some of you, was way too long and in some ways too short. We made it longer than most of you could probably stand to give you lots of ideas, because I have found when I listen to lists like these, when I read them in books, I think, okay, that doesn't apply. But boy, I never thought of that guy's job that way. If I think of my job the way he's thinking of his job, I can think of three or four things that I could measure. If you ask me to measure Mike and I's job relative to our podcast, it would be missing a podcast delivery date. And we've never done that, right, Mike?
Nope.
No. Now, if we then went further and said, Mark meets the deadline of having the podcast show notes to Mike 6 weeks in advance, I'm not doing very well on that. When I get busy, I slip well behind on that. On the other hand, the big one, having a podcast out on time, we've never missed. Actually, I think, Mike, we've delivered late a couple times, like a podcast was supposed to be up, but it wasn't up. I mean, we could say we put it up, but there's a difference between putting it up and it actually being up for people to download. Like a link was broken or something?
Well, they get into what's the standard. So typically our standard is to have it up by Monday. Now, we publish it Sunday night, but the standard is Monday, right? So
yeah, and for a long time it was Monday, and then our friends in India said, we would really like it before our morning commute. And so we started publishing it Sunday.
That's right. So, and I know, so we publish it early. That's what we do. But
yeah,
now, you know, as time goes on, people expect it on Sunday night. And if it's not on Sunday night, they probably think it's late, which is reasonable, right?
So. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the idea here is for the list to give you a start, to get you thinking about how to think about your job. And we could do it a lot longer with more specificity if we had more time. So that's a basic example of how to think about some of your measurements, okay? By the way, if you want to work on your measurements and you want to send us an email at customerservice@manager-tools.com and say, hey, what do you think of these measurements? We'll be happy to look at them. So having done all this, you've really only answered two of the three key questions, which is the work you do. I think you can think about your own work and how you might measure it. The actual goal you're trying to meet, and the goal being a standard within the measurement, that goal, you may want to set that yourself, or you may want to wait for your boss to set it, okay? And now we're sort of getting into understanding your risk, but the issue here is, if you've never been measured in this way before, there's a danger in agreeing to a goal if you don't know what your previous performance was against the goal. That's a potential problem.
Yeah, are you suggesting that folks not set a goal until they measured it for a while, or just understand that there's a risk there?
I would not go to my boss and say, I thought about my work. I've thought about how we can measure it. I've got some proxies here, and I'm going to recommend a standard. If I had not previously tracked that proxy and know how I performed against it. Because look, the example I gave about geometry, which is probably lame for a lot of people, I happen to like geometry, is in the US, everybody knows the standard is 90%. Although interestingly, now they're thinking about changing the standards.
Upwards, of course, right?
Folks, as you might imagine, Mike has some snark and the answer is no, downwards, of course. Yeah, pretty soon people are going to be saying, I got an A when A's were hard to get. Of course, that's always applied to Harvard, but anyway. So the danger is your boss will say, well, look, let's choose something easy. We'll choose 85%. When in fact, this particular process is messed up and you've achieved 50% and you're kicking tail compared to a bunch of other people who are at 40 and 30%.
Right. And 85% sounds reasonable. It's just
it's not
where everybody is.
And the reason for this, folks, is because oftentimes when it comes to measuring anything at all that is publicly available, the measures that are shared publicly are going to be high. The 40-yard dash scores in the NFL Combine, there's almost nobody listening to this show that could do anything equivalent to what the 40-yard dash scores are at the Combine.
Yeah, even the worst score, right?
Yeah, and look, we certainly give a nod of our head to Six Sigma, which has transformed a lot of the corporate world. And there are places where when you start measuring, you say, well, let's figure out a way to cut costs and so on. And it was a brilliant idea. But there's a great many more places in the world where people don't know what their measures are. And it's going to be really difficult to then guess the goal. So you just got to be careful.
Well, I have an even more simple way of thinking about this, which is I have the Ozan rule of corporate survival is don't shoot yourself in the head. So if
if you're going to you may not be able to dodge a bullet if somebody else tries to shoot you in the head.
That's right.
But don't grab the gun, put the gun into your head, and pull the trigger.
If you're, before you suggest a standard, and I think the implication of most of our conversation here is that you're trying to figure out your goals. It's not your boss asking you necessarily. And so you're going to suggest something. So why in the world would you ever suggest something that you don't know that you have a pretty good chance of meeting? I don't know. That's just me.
Exactly. I tend to agree.
So, dude, I think that's good. I think our next thing we want to talk about is understand your risk, but we're kind of reaching our time limits here. So let's cover that next week.
Happy to. I was a little verbose this week. Sorry.
All right, my friend. We'll see you next week.
See you, partner.
So long, folks. Thanks, everyone. That's it. We'll see you next week. So long.
This podcast was produced by Manager Tools. Manager Tools creates actionable management guidance every single week. To receive additional materials via our newsletter and to find products for situations you may face as a manager or professional, go to www.manager-tools.com. Search for Manager Tools on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn.
Welcome to Manager Tools. Getting your goals from your boss, part 3. Here we go. This chaos answers these questions. What if I don't have clear goals for my boss? How do I find out how my boss is going to measure me? How can I help my boss set goals for me and my team? If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening.
If your knowledge of DISC, high D's, I's, S's, and C's, the perfectionists, the Attila the Huns, the marketers, the team players, if that has helped you become more effective at work, you'll want to seriously consider coming to our Effective Communications Conference. We set the basics of DISC in an hour or so, and then we spend the rest of the day teaching you how finally to communicate effectively, which is to pay attention to what your listener does and communicate in a way that makes sense to them. At the end of the day, you'll be able to read someone in a conversation, determine their major DISC tendency, and then based on that, make some changes in how you deliver to improve the chances that you get harmony and congruence and collaboration and not drama, conflict, and tension. Come see us.
All right, Mark. Well, we talked about the background work involved in getting goals from your boss, the preparation task, and now we need to talk about understanding your risk, because there is some risk, right?
Yeah. If there were no risk in changing to this way of doing things with clear measurements and so on, everybody would have done it. Okay. But clearly, even if you're in a place with no measurements, you know, which is the vast majority of managers, it's not clear. The major measures are not clear. And even though that's frustrating for some, the fact that so few people try hard to make it clear ought to indicate to everybody. I mean, people in large numbers aren't that stupid. And one of my favorite quotes is, when there is chaos, someone is benefiting. So yeah, there's risk here if you have the conversation. Now, I would argue that so far what we've been talking about is how to figure out how to measure yourself. And in a way, certainly all this stuff is necessary to talk to your boss, but you could do this privately if you want. You could actually do this without ever talking to your boss and say, look, here's how I'm going to measure myself. And your boss would figure it out sooner or later. But if you didn't make a big deal out of it, you could spend 6 or 9 months refining your measures, learning from your team which ones are easy, which ones are hard. You could find out what measures you thought were easy to measure, but in fact take 2 hours a week, which is probably too much, and which you thought were hard, but actually there's an existing report somewhere that you can cobble together a proxy for something.
That's right. And then you could start reporting them to your boss and you get feedback from your boss, or you hear something, might not be official managed tools feedback, but you'd hear something back and you could refine your measures based upon what you hear back from your boss.
Yeah, but I would even say even before that, Mike, just do it yourself. If you're worried about what your boss might do, okay, there's nothing we've said so far that would keep you from doing this for yourself. And if you have no relationship with your boss and your boss doesn't pay attention to what you do and you're worried about your trust of them and so on, you could do all this stuff yourself and say, here's what my measures are going to be. I'm not going to be right. And maybe it'll take me 6 months to a year to get them right. But then in the future, I'll be able to say, here are the things I've done. And probably your boss will find out when you send them your self-review, if in fact your boss asks you for that. Many don't, but it potentially could be a big plus for you if after a year of working on this stuff and not talking to your boss because you don't have a relationship with him or her, suddenly your boss gives you a bad review or something and HR's involved and they say, you know, your boss is saying this and this and this, really concerned about this and this. And you say, well, hey, listen, no offense. I've tried to talk to my boss about measures. He hasn't. Here are the measures that I've measured. Okay, let's have a discussion about whether or not these measures are reasonable. And if they are, look at my track record. And if you want, why don't you use these measures to compare me to other managers who report to my boss? Now, I'm not saying that HR is going to take your side, but it might get you a situation where you could move within the company to another boss, which may have been a good idea all along anyway.
Right.
And if you're somebody who likes to win, why would you want to play a game where there are no scores involved? Other than a vague one at the end of the year. That's what an old boss of mine said. Look, if you like to win, you got to have a measure. We take that for granted in sports that we see, but there are measures. The fact is there's some risk here. Your boss may be just fine with neither you nor he fixing your goals. Think about it. From his perspective, from her perspective, without them fixed, they don't have to do the work to fix them. And they still get to judge you somehow, somewhat. And it's going to be subjective. And what's funny about that is that nobody ever really argues about that. It's silly, but it's dumb, but it's true.
Yeah. Once you fix them, though, then, you know, his or her role is fixed, right? And the subjectivity is less valuable.
Yeah, exactly. So he has to actually pay attention to these measures. And because your work rolls up to him, now you've essentially given his boss a way to measure part of his organization, your part of his organization. And you now have a little bit of a defense against your boss's short-term requests that you take your eye off the ball that you've agreed to. Once your boss says, yeah, these are the measures, when he comes down and says, well, I want you to do X, you're like, well, okay. And I know, and of course, everybody has to know there's a line in your job description which says, and anything else the boss deems reasonable. And so there are bosses that overload that particular line in your official or unofficial job description. Rather than just saying, I'm really busy to your boss, if he or she comes to you with something that's fairly well off kilter or out in left field, you could say, hey, look, just to be clear, I think that's going to take 6 hours a week. And when I look at the stuff I'm doing, help me understand what part of these are not important enough, or should I keep doing them? Now, you don't want to go to that well too often. The smart thing, I think, to do in that situation is come up with the measures. Then when your boss throws you something out of left field, you do it. But because you've been sharing your measures with your team, you'll be able to delegate something that you've been doing to your team, and that frees up the time that you need to get done the thing the boss wants you to do, even if probably you don't think it's linearly related to the things that you believe contribute to your value to the organization, which ought to be, you ought to be measuring those things.
Yeah. You're just getting a short overview of the delegation model. That's really where to, that's,
yeah, the delegation cascade. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So folks, don't take what we're saying here as license to go tell your boss, oh, I got these other measures. They're going to suffer. Therefore,
yeah.
It might work once or twice, but it gets old pretty quickly.
Yeah. And from your perspective, if you fix these measures, you'd better meet them. Because the fact is, when your measures aren't fixed, there's probably no question that a lot of us don't meet whatever's in anybody's head. But because everybody knows they're all in everybody's head, nobody holds anybody accountable. I mean, greatest management principle in the world, right? The things that get measured are the things that get done. If you suddenly started getting measured on 5 parts of your job, even though you thought there were 8 parts of your job, I promise you would get better faster at the 5 that are being measured, period. Or if not, you're going to have a lot of political headwinds to go through. And so you better meet them. And if you don't, again, there's a chance that your boss's subjective opinion of you is all that matters at the end of year review. So relative to risk, our guidance is that it depends on your relationship with your boss. If you trust her, do it. If you don't, be careful. And again, if you don't and decide not to brief your boss, you can still use this work to guide your decisions and measure yourself over time. If you don't trust your boss, do the work, determine your metrics, keep it to yourself. And again, as defense against the potential that your boss is capricious enough to threaten you, fire you, attempt to put you off track on your career, whatever it might be. And for the record, Mike, this is interesting. I was somewhere recently. So he says, you know, you're always talking about career. And, you know, I don't really want a career. I said, well, okay, but you want a job, right? He says, yeah, I want this job. And she says, I like this job. I want to stay in this job. And Mark, I'm willing to get better at it. I don't mind, but I really like this job. And I said, well, okay, this job is your career. And she said, no, it's not. And I said, well, would you like to keep it for 20 years, assuming who your boss is and so on? She says, yeah. I said, well, at the end of your life, when you look back, aren't you going to talk about to your family and friends about your career? And your career is a succession of jobs you have, and this is going to be the most significant part of your career? She says, yeah, that's not what you mean when you say career. And I say, well, okay, I thought it was, but what do you think I mean? What do I actually mean when I say career? She said, people getting promoted multiple times. I said, I'm sorry, that's just not so. When I say career, I mean the entirety of your professional life experience. Your career could include the military or the Peace Corps or a volunteer organization or teaching, followed by entrepreneurial ventures, followed by a big company, followed by more entrepreneurial, followed by your spouse or you making a great deal of money and starting a venture capital fund. And all of that is your career. Not just the big company trying to climb the ladder. That is one form of career. But I don't think there's any guidance we've ever put out that we've said this before, that we would ever say, oh, this doesn't apply in small companies, right? I mean,
yeah, I don't think so.
We recommend a 2-person company, a CEO and her admin have one-on-ones and feedback and coaching and delegation and so on.
I guess according to this person, my career is over because I don't expect I'll ever get promoted again.
Yeah,
so I guess I'm done.
Yeah. Well,
thanks, everybody. We'll see you.
Yeah. I might get demoted, though, if you become my boss. That would be.
I guess it is possible to go down.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. You never know. Yeah. Yeah. So as we said a couple of times, you don't have to do this with your boss if you don't trust her. But, Mike, let's continue, though, and talk about, okay, if you do trust her enough or if you're willing to broach the subject, the next thing you got to do. And I could have just said set up a meeting with your boss, but I want to be more clear about this because I am amazed. And it actually happens at Manager Tools as well with some of my directs and me. People say, hey, can I have a half hour of your time? And I now have learned to respond back, no. And guess what happens when you say no? They say, well, it was about X. I said, so I had to say no before you're willing to admit what it was about. So in other words, it benefited you to not tell me what you wanted my time for. You were expecting me to choose part of my most precious resource, my time, and give it to you, unknown of what the value was to the organization or to me or anything else. So your knowledge of what you want to talk about is more important than my knowledge about it. And so therefore, you actively want me not to know. Now, look, I trust you, but why wouldn't you share it with me? So, folks, request some time with your boss, but don't make it a blind request. Don't surprise your boss with an impromptu request. Don't just show up in her office. Don't just say, I want a half an hour. Don't go to their admin. Don't put an appointment on their calendar that's blank. Meet with Joe, okay? Do your background work. Do some prep on what your measures ought to be. And then send your boss an email asking for a half an hour to discuss what your job metrics and goals should be.
Yeah. A meeting to highlight that to your boss that you know you ought to have goals and metrics and your boss hasn't given them to you and may not know what they are. You know, a meeting to share that with your boss is generally not a good idea.
Not a good thing.
Yeah. Embarrass your boss. That works well.
My unofficial name for this is the Stackhouse Grazing Rights Rule, which is a line from The American President, where one of the aides comes to the president as he's leaving and says, hey, Mr. President, Senator Stackhouse, I think from Wyoming or Montana, wants just 5 minutes if he can get it. And he says, did he say what it's about? No. Well, I'll tell you, no. The answer is no, because I'll tell you, if it's Stackhouse, he wants to talk about grazing rights. Right? So again, Stackhouse, a senator, has put a blind request in front of the president. And first of all, the president says no. And second of all, he says no because he knows what the guy wants to talk about. Because if the guy really was confident about what he wanted to talk about, he'd have told the aide what he wanted to talk about with the president. So don't do that. Bosses hate that. Now, you might think, wait a minute, I do that to my boss all the time, and he doesn't mind at all. No, there's a difference between him giving you the time and him not minding at all. Trust me, we hate it, okay? Do people the courtesy of letting them know what it's about.
And it's more than that, though, right? It's not only letting them know what it's about, but sending them some advanced material so that they know what you know, right?
Yeah. Attach to your email a Word or a PowerPoint document outlining the areas you looked into, right? Some of your raw data, the job description, reviews, emails, whatever. Include some slides or notes. Hey, look, it's a half an hour meeting, no more than 5 slides, okay? You know, that talk about your suggestions for areas to be considered. That's all you really need. And of course, we've said before, there are bosses who want to be talked to first, and there are bosses who prefer to read first. Mike is an example of somebody who says, I don't want to have a meeting with you without you sending me something in advance. That's fine. If you do that to me, if I'm your boss, you don't have to send something in advance, but you have to tell me what we want to talk about, okay? And if I like what you tell me, I'll read this stuff that you give me. Mike wants to read it before the meeting. Mike's way is probably slightly better, but half the world does it my way, and we're not going to eliminate that overnight.
We could argue whether it's better or not. It's different. It might be better for me. It might not be better for the organization because I'm investing a whole lot of time that may not be necessary.
Reading, yeah. So. Well, here's the simple answer. You always send the stuff, and guys like me won't read it, but guys like Mike will. Mike's more analytical, more logical, more rational, more smarter. There's a good phrase, more smarter. And so what you do is you send it and you assume, well, first of all, if you trust and know your boss, you ought to know whether or not he or she would read it, but you assume they haven't read it. And you go into the meeting prepared to go over this stuff. You don't send an email to a boss that it has some attachments, particularly just the day before, and then go in and say, well, I've assumed you've read everything, so let's get right to the bottom line. It's like, the boss, I promise you what the boss will say is, are you crazy? Even if he or she started to read it, they're going to be like, what, you send me stuff? I'm expected to read it to prepare for a meeting I didn't have on my calendar until yesterday? Even if you give them a week's notice, don't expect it. So you send the information. You hope they read it. If they don't, you go into the meeting as if they didn't. And if they then brush you aside and say, I read your stuff, I know what I want to say, fine, now we're saving time. The other point, the other side of it is, you assume they've read it, and you go in and say, well, so here, what do you think? And they go, yeah, I haven't read it. Now you look like a fool. I mean, I'm sorry you do. That's my opinion anyway. All right, so now, When it comes to the meeting itself, folks, you got to be willing to not expect answers. You got to ask for help rather than a bottom line. I'm like, how many times has this happened where people come in and they just expect you to have a decision? Just like, okay.
All the time.
Mike and I are both okay making decisions based on the information we have. We don't need to boil the ocean every time to get to the bottom line. But I can't tell you the number of times people just say, well, what's the answers? Well, I don't know. In fact, we have a podcast about that. You're not required to know all the answers. And you're definitely not required to know all the answers right now.
Well, particularly if somebody's asking me about a decision relative to what they should do in an area for which they're responsible. It's like, well, okay, let's talk about what do you think you should do? Let's talk about it.
If I trust you, I want to hear from you. Yeah. I don't want to make it up on my own and then have you not like two of the measures and then have there be tension. So.
Right. Usually they explain what they think they ought to do. And you go, okay, that's good. Okay, do that.
That's good.
Good. There you go.
Do that. Yeah. That's why the manager's favorite letter in the English language ought to be the letter C, right? Do that.
Even if it's not perfect, right? They'll learn.
Yeah. Don't make the perfect enemy the good. Right. So when you meet with your boss, folks, ask for help in figuring this out versus asking what the approved solution is or should be. If you ask for the approved solution and she doesn't have it, it makes her look bad, probably, in her mind. It's possible your bosses can consider what you've done as a starting point to the discussion or the process of really, quote, really figuring it out. And really, from their perspective, all the work that you've done, this is just a starting point. So, some questions you can ask to get the discussion going, even after you've done all your work and you feel pretty confident that you've got 80% of the solution worked out. Ask some questions to your boss and be willing to take some notes. And they're pretty simple. What results do you expect of me? What are the measures you are or are going to compare me against? What objective standards exist? And folks, maybe you know what they are, but maybe you only know what you know. And there are 6 that you think exist, but your boss knows there are 8. And when she says there are 8, you say, well, that's good because there are 2 here that I didn't know I was being measured against. And then you could also ask, what subjective things do you look at to round out your evaluation of me? And I got to tell you, the subjective thing, part of the reason we want you guys to have clear metrics is because of the vast number of managers and directs in the world. And even if you're a manager and we're talking about your director, your boss, where behavioral tendencies are different, and we've got a high D boss with a high C direct. And the subjective evaluation of that, if it's left unchecked, can be the high D says this high C is a stick in the mud, you know, a perfectionist, can't pull the trigger, can't make a decision. If you turn it around and the high C is the boss, the perfectionist is the boss of the high D, the take no prisoners person, says, you know, too quick to the trigger, goes off half-cocked, you know, willing to run roughshod over people, you know, creates difficult situations with his colleagues and so on. And I got to tell you, your boss can handle a lot more of that behavioral tendency difference if there's clarity between the two of you about what your job is. And there's just too many cases where we're left to subjectiveness and managers aren't well trained and they basically manage people based on how they want to be managed. And the end result is if you're different than them, they don't like what you do because you're not like them. So be careful about that. Ask about subjective stuff.
Yeah, good point. And of course, you're going to ask these questions and you're going to get perfect, precise answers to all your questions.
Yeah, of course.
Because they have all the answers.
Yeah, you're not going to get a perfect answer. Look, I think what you should expect is further discussion. So don't get let down that it's not a one and done kind of meeting. It usually isn't. Expect some dithering, okay, this looks good, maybe some more and whatever. And you may have to push to get another meeting to pin it down. And your boss may not let you pin her down. And if that's the case, you'll have to accept that you're going to have to measure yourself with it. And maybe you won't make a big deal out of it to your boss, but every once in a while she'll ask. So regardless of what your boss does, you'll be better able to make choices about what to work on. And even if your boss doesn't agree with all of them, you'll be better able to defend those decisions about how you've spent your time and how you've applied the resources of your team and so on to the needs of the organization.
Right. And that's fine, right? Even if you only reach 80%, you know, agreement on what your goals and objectives are, or 80% certainty maybe in terms of what they are, man, 80% is a lot better than zero.
Yeah. And I've said this an awful lot, and I think a lot of people don't get it. And it's only because to some degree, nobody talks about it. And I haven't figured out exactly the right way to say it, a pithy way to say it. But your organization is an organism. It's a part of an organic ecosystem, the ecosystem of the world in which it resides. So if you're a technology company, you're in the technology industry, you're also a business, and you serve society. Okay. Your organization, particularly those that are profit-seeking organizations or who use profit as a proxy for health and growth, if you're organic, if you're an organism, one of the rules of organic life, carbon-based life forms, which your organization is, that's why it's called an organization and not a mechanization. If you're a carbon-based life form, in order to survive in your ecosystem, you have to seek stasis within your environment. You have to fit into your environment. The equivalent is, if it's cold, humans put on coats when they go outside. You have to adjust, and your environment gives you feedback. Your organization serves society in some way with services or products, knowledge, what have you. And society provides you feedback in the form, in many cases, of revenue. And you then turn that into either positive margins or negative margins. If the external world is good at giving you feedback, and we all know that it is because in terms of the way you count it, which largely is revenue or dollars coming in, and if it is good at giving you that and you get a lot of it, and gosh, when we launch a product, we all sit around going, okay, how many are we going to sell? You know, you're clearly desperate for feedback from the external world. If that external feedback exists, and of course it does, we have to have an internal environment that is fairly well in stasis, in agreement, in concert with the external environment, which is your customers, your competition, the economy, the marketplace, and so on. If you have an internal system where measures are unclear, where goals aren't set, where feedback is not communicated, you're going to end up failing in the long run because the internal processes of your organization are out of sync with the external relationship that your company has with the marketplace. The marketplace will give you feedback. Either we give you money for stuff or we don't. But if internally we don't know what we're going for and we don't talk about what we're going for and we don't talk about when we're off track and when a quarterly sales number goes down, your competition, I'm sorry, the marketplace is saying, you guys are off track. That's what quarterly income is about. That's what annual income is about. You made less this year because you're off track. You're not in concert with what the marketplace wants. If we have an internal system where we all think, oh, it's just subjective, it'll be fine. Really, what we're doing is getting lucky and we're leaving money on the table, because if we got aligned more, there would be more of what the external marketplace wants and less of what it doesn't want. So keep that in mind always. You've got to mimic, as a manager, the external ecosystem, the customers and the competition in the marketplace. Otherwise, your organism is inefficient and that's not good. And in this particular case, if you think the risk is worth it of talking to your boss, I definitely think the process is worth it. But if you think the risk is worth it, figuring out how you're going to be measured with your boss is certainly a tactical win for you. And it's definitely a strategic lesson you won't forget. Without metrics you can point to, your success may come down to the kind of relationship your boss lets you have with him. And in our minds, that's not a foolproof plan.
Definitely not. All right, my friend. Thank you.
You bet, partner. Anytime.
All right, man. We'll see you later. Thanks, everyone. That's it. We'll see you next week. So long.
This podcast was produced by Manager Tools. Manager Tools creates actionable management guidance every single week. To receive additional materials via our newsletter and to find products for situations you may face as a manager or a professional, go to www.manager-tools.com. Search for Manager Tools on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn.